There's little doubt that Chinese contemporary art is becoming an emerging force in the global art scene. The presence of Chinese artists at major international art events is significantly increasing, while more and more people in the international art world are visiting and acting in the Chinese art scene. In fact, a very low percentage, in the single digits, of galleries in China are owned by Chinese nationals. Almost all of them are owned by foreigners. What is the real significance of Chinese contemporary art in Chinese society and the larger world today? There's also an interesting question regarding the significance of contemporary art in general in the world today. We find contemporary art now in the news much more than certainly it was 5 years ago. As is being well documented through the international media, China is experiencing an explosive economic, consumptive, and urbanizing boom. Social democracy and justice are, however, evolving at a slower pace. Individual freedom, and in particular, creativity, has not been encouraged. Artists are caught in this intense contradiction, a schizophrenic social context, and thus contemporary art in China is a highly diverse and complex scene. In October, a group from the Aspen Art Museum traveled to Beijing and Shanghai. We visited the studios of Gu Wenda and Ai Weiwei, along with tens of galleries and museums. Thus emerged two themes, that of duality and that of unity. The first is what curator-critic Hu Hanru named, quote, longing for paradise, negotiating the real, unquote. The challenge of cultural memory and cultural reality and how the two are reconciled. The second, the confluence of and tension between Chinese and Western cultures. The third, the economic strategies of communism and capitalism. Nowhere is the resulting quest for unity to reconcile these and other dualities more apparent than in the slogan for the next Communist Party Congress, no longer long live Mao, but rather the single word, unity. As contemporary art offers insight into, as well as a mirror on contemporary society, this panel will address some of the following questions. What is the influence of classical Chinese art, writing, and philosophies? Some of the answers are surprising, like Xu Bing, his book From the Sky, in which he carved 4,000 nonsense Chinese characters into wood panels in the style of the 11th century Song Dynasty, or Cai Gao Cheng, who works with the ancient Chinese invention of gunpowder. What is the influence of new artists within as well as outside of China? Here we see Ai Weiwei, pervasive at the current Documenta 12 exhibition, among other works exhibiting 1,001 Chinese nationals imported for the duration of the exhibition. Actually, they're coming in groups of 200 at a time. What are the influences on and from these artists? And what is the role of the government and censorship on its creation? As part of the Aspen Art Museum's mission to show the most interesting developments in contemporary global art, last year we showed Yang Fudong. This year we will present new work by Cao Fei, one of four female artists to represent China at the current Venice Biennale, as well as the first one-person exhibition in the United States by Yan Lei, one of our panelists. While much of the current dialogue about Chinese contemporary art has a market focus, and this is understandable because a Chinese contemporary work recently realized a price of $2.7 million just 4 years after the first ever presence of a work of Chinese art at an evening auction, it is my hope that our program today will concentrate on the historical basis for, as well as the current cultural climate of, the creation and presentation of Chinese contemporary art. It's my great pleasure to introduce my friend and colleague, Melissa Chu. In 2001, Ms. Chu was appointed the Asia Society's curator for contemporary Asian and Asian American art. That was the first ever post of its kind in the United States. The Asia Society is, of course, in New York. And on July 1st, 2004, she became the director of the museum at the Asia Society. She was a founding member of the Asian Contemporary Art Consortium and a driving force behind the establishment of Asian Contemporary Art Week in New York. Ms. Chu has had a long involvement with Asian contemporary art and is recognized as a leading authority in the field. Prior to the Asia Society, she was the founding director of the Asia Australia Art Center in Sydney. She has curated over 30 exhibitions with artists from Malaysia, Vietnam, China, Thailand, and Japan, among others. She received her BA from the University of Western Sydney and her MA from the College of Fine Arts at the University of South Wales. She completed her PhD from the University of Western Sydney, and her dissertation was on the work of contemporary Chinese artists. She was also asked by the Oxford University Press to edit the Grove Dictionary of Art edition on Asian contemporary art, and has been a faculty member at the Rhode Island School of Design, where she taught Asian contemporary art and design. Please welcome Melissa.
Okay. I've been asked to use two mics, so I hope you can hear me. No, you can't. Can you hear me now?
Yes,
great, fabulous. Well, it's my great honour to be here at the Ideas Festival in Aspen. What an extraordinary event. And I'm very pleased to be part of one of the first cultural panels. And you'll note that we had a couple of delays this morning, but I hope that the audio visuals will work, because we have some, or at least I have some images to show you, to share with you, of Chinese contemporary artists. And my talk today will be based in two parts, and it's really to provide some of the background to the recent auction results. We all know about Chinese contemporary art being hot. Many museum groups, like the Aspen group here, have traveled to China in recent times to see artist studios and the growing or burgeoning museum scene happening there. We also have, of course, the extraordinary auction results, which have a 2.5-year history now. So for many, especially here in the United States, the market for Chinese contemporary art seems to have sprung from nowhere. But today, what I wanted to introduce to you was an idea that, in fact, Chinese contemporary art has a 30-year history. And I'm going to give you something of a kind of potted history, kind of a briefing, really, more than anything else, to give you a sense of where Chinese contemporary art has come from. Now, to begin, most people's understanding of Chinese contemporary art has really come through the international exhibitions. And with that, one of the first ever exhibitions of Chinese contemporary art happened in Berlin at the House of World Cultures. This is actually one of the first ever books published by Oxford University Press on the subject in 1993. And it can be seen as something of a first wave of interest in Chinese contemporary art that, of course, happened outside of China. And it was really identified through a number of institutions, primarily in Germany, Australia, and Hong Kong. That was kind of the first wave of shows that happened in the early 1990s. One might identify the second wave of interest as in the late 1990s with exhibitions like this. My own institution, Asia Society, collaborated with SF MoMA in 1998 to present the first ever museum exhibition. And it really focused on developments in the mid-1990s around experimental art practices in China. And of course, we come to more recent times and the development of extensive private collections outside of China. In fact, this is the book cover of an important private collection, the Uli Sig collection, which was shown first in Bern in Switzerland, and in fact is launching on an international tour. But this was a collector who collected very early, mostly in the 1980s and 1990s, and was able to secure a number of major works. And I think that one of the interesting statistics cited around the year 2000 was that 89% of Chinese contemporary art outside of China was in Switzerland. And I think that was really primarily a signal to Uli Sig and another collector, Guillaume Lenz, who was also had exhibitions of his collections. So you start to see that the first wave of interest was in museums. Now we have private collectors really collecting extensively. But one must not forget, for a long time, of course, collections existed outside of China. There is also a phenomenon, more recently, of collectors in China. And this is an image of Guanyi's art warehouse on the outskirts of Beijing. And it shows you that there are collectors who are collecting in the field of experimental art practices. And here you see, of course, one of Yanlei's pieces that you'll learn about more later on today. Now, another issue that often gets spoken about when we think of Chinese contemporary art is censorship. And I want to also remind all of you that while it was certainly the case in the early 1990s, post-89, that artists could not show contemporary experimental art in museums, today it is quite the opposite. And this is an opening for an exhibition called The Wall, which was also afterwards shown at the Albright Knox Museum here in the US at Buffalo. But this is an image of Yin Shojun's work at the opening of the Millennium Museum exhibition. And you'll see that here is installation pieces and things like that that you would never have otherwise seen in the early 1990s. This is a close-up of her installation. It shows she invited a number of her mother and her friends to make these landscapes, that is kind of village landscapes out of quilts, as a signal towards China's manufacturing central industry. And of course, the burgeoning museum. Museums are an incredible growth area in China right now. This is what you see here is the construction outside of Chengdu of 25 museum complex, where a private collector who I'm told has 3 million objects is planning these museums to become something of a tourist attraction. This image was taken just last year, and I have no doubt it's already complete. But it does give you a sense of the scale that both private and also public museums are figuring in the contemporary art scene in China. Of course, alongside museums, there's also the gallery districts. In places like Beijing, this is actually an image of the Beijing Tokyo Art Projects Gallery, which was one of the first galleries established at the 798 complex. And you'll see that it was it's a series of German-built factory complexes, and they have in fact left the old Maoist slogans from when this place was a factory, inciting the workers to work harder. But here we have, of course, a contemporary installation in this environment. And it gives you something of a sense that not only is the market in existence outside of China, but also now inside of China. And this is a series of images of the first representation of China at the Venice Biennale. And although it was slated for 2 years prior, it was cancelled because of SARS, and so the first time was in 2005. And, of course, it had the seal of approval from the Chinese government. And so you'll see that in 2000, there was something of a turnaround in terms of the way that the Chinese government saw experimental contemporary art practices. And I see very much the representation at the Venice Biennale as a culmination of that wanting the desire on the part of the government to embrace contemporary art. Now I thought I'd turn to something of a brief history of Chinese contemporary art, which is often cited as beginning in 1978 or 79, when Deng Xiaoping declared his open door policy, which saw greater economic, social, and of course cultural freedoms. Now, for many artists, this meant a newfound engagement with Western art history. For many years, artists did not have access to magazines and books from other parts of the world. But one of the very first moments, if you like, in Chinese contemporary art history is that of the Stars. It was a radical band of artists, mostly untrained artists, who staged an exhibition outside the National Art Gallery. And it was important because it was an unsanctioned exhibition. They simply gathered together their work and they hung it on the fence outside the National Art Gallery in 1979. And one of the principal artists in this group is Wang Keping. And this is considered one of the most important works from this period. It brings together both references to Mao, but also a Buddha figure. It is often interpreted as somewhat of a criticism of Maoist policies, although, of course, a veiled criticism. Wang Keping is a sculptor who, like many of the Stars group, left China in the early 1980s, and he has since that time resided in Paris and continues to sculpt from wood in this fashion. Now, throughout the 1980s, the first generation of experimental Chinese artists really sought to engage with different kinds of art forms, different art histories that they were formerly unaware of. Remember that during the Cultural Revolution, from 66 to 76, there was no such access. And so the 1980s is often characterized as this kind of frenetic activity where artists were just first seeing for the very first time what Western artists had been doing. And so you'll see in their work, mostly in paintings, that they started to work with different sorts of influences. And you'll see in this painting by Wang Guangyi, and I'll show you another image of his work, of works that you might be more familiar with, he's taking on the reference of the Madonna and Child, which is such an important kind of iconography for Western art history. Now, to most Chinese artists at this time, this would have been completely foreign, but he is working through and trying to kind of come to terms with another kind of frame of reference outside of his own knowledge of Chinese history. The 1980s was also a time when many, many artists banded together to show their work. And this is an example of a group called the Southern Artists Salon, who were primarily working in the south of China in Guangzhou. And this, I think, is a really good indication of how national the movement was. This was a time when artists across the country were banding together, showing their work, not necessarily in galleries. This is a performance in something of a disused warehouse, but they also went to bars and other places to show their works. And of course, coming to later in the decade, this is one of the most important works also from this period that incidentally has been acquired by the Walker Art Museum in Minneapolis. And so if you ever want to see it in the flesh, you can go to Minneapolis and see it. But it's by one of the key exponents of the experimental art movement, Huang Yongping, who incidentally also lives in Paris right now. He shows regularly around the world, but he considers his home base Paris. Now, this work is important, I think, because like Wang Guangyi, he is here dealing with this sense of another art history, and in this sense, Western art history, in terms of wanting to kind of bring them together. And he did it in a conceptual way by finding two very important art historical books and mixing them together in a washing machine. And then he shows the pulp here. So it's very much working in a conceptual idiom. And Heidi mentioned Chu Bing. This is also considered one of the most important works from this period, primarily because of its feat in terms of technical skill, but also its commentary on what was going on at that time in China. When most artists were doing quite radical conceptual things like Huang Yongping, Chu Bing chose to carve nearly 4,000 small woodblock characters and print them in these three different forms. You'll see the book form, the extended scripture form, and the posters at the exhibited at the back. And it's called Heavenly Book or Book from the Sky. And it's primarily a commentary on the power of language in Chinese culture. That here we have these characters that the artist spent nearly 4 years carving. Each one is individual. But each one, at first glance, and obviously to a non-Chinese audience, looks like Chinese, but each has been modified in a small way to make it nonsensical. And so when 89 happened, and this work was held up as the primary example of what was wrong with Chinese experimental art, it was heavily criticized in various different magazines in the media because it was seen as a dead end, that why would an artist spend 4 years carving these works that was essentially a criticism of language. And of course now it's seen as one of the most important masterworks from the period. This is a detail, so you see that each character has been carved and printed in this book form, and it's presented in different forms, and here we have the hand-bound books. Now we come to just months before June 4th. This was the China Avant-Garde exhibition. It was an exhibition staged at the National Art Gallery in Beijing in China. And in fact, the banners for this exhibition that you'll see is this no U-turn sign. And it was really seen as a symbol that encapsulated the feeling of the artists, and that was never to go back, never to return to history, but to push forward with this new experimentation that the artists had all shown in the exhibition China Avant-Garde. And it really is, in most accounts of Chinese contemporary art history, this is seen as one of the most important moments. It was a moment when Chinese experimental art had finally made it to a government-sanctioned museum. This was the National Art Museum. Of course, as with all of these things, at the opening of the exhibition, one of the artists, Sha Lu, shot her work in a performance. And, of course, the exhibition was closed down and the artists were arrested. And there are a number of kind of unsolicited performances that took place at the opening. And I think that it was that and a combination of other things that saw the exhibition also shut down two more times before its final closure. But this was, of course, in February, just months before June 4th. And by a lot of accounts, it's seen as something of a symbol of things to come. Now, after 89, we all know these types of images. This is by Wang Guangyi. And he, of course, is considered one of the leading artists, and we see many of his paintings at auctions. And I think it's important to remember that when this artist first began to create these types of works, it was in the early 1990s when multinationals like Coca-Cola were first finding footing in China. And also it was the first kind of time when Chinese society was kind of engaging with ideas of consumerism. So Wang Guangyi's combination of these logos of multinational companies with what are essentially Cultural Revolution posters that the artist himself used to paint is this kind of marriage of both the traditional communist society and its transition into a consumer society or market-oriented society. And Zhang Shaogang, another artist, but one who is considered a leader of the cynical realism movement of the early 1990s. And again, it's important to remember that these works were created from a time when China was changing a lot. Of course, it's changing a lot now. But there were enormous social changes that the artist were really trying to capture. And this is from his Bloodline series, and you'll see the very faint red bloodline. And each of the paintings is based on a photograph most likely taken during the Cultural Revolution. They're all family portraits. And they speak of not just the bloodline, that is, the bloodline of one's ancestry and the blood that links one's family members, but also the connection to communist ideology. And one sees it through the one-child policy, of course, not imaged here, but in many of the other paintings that he has done. And as we moved into the mid to late 1990s, we saw more and more performance works, and they were often staged at places like Beijing's East Village on the outskirts of Beijing. And this is one of the principal performance artists of this time, Ma Liuming, who staged a performance where he walked length of the Great Wall, it said, until his feet bled. So you start to get a sense of the kinds of performance pieces that were important during this time. And I would also add that most of the performance works involved some degree of nudity, and so some of them, and Ma Liuming is certainly one of them, who were arrested on occasion. Even though the performances were mostly done in the privacy of their homes and studios, this was often a situation where they were reported by various neighbours and got into all sorts of trouble. This is a work by Sung Dong, and it's a work that he carried out in Tibet, in Lhasa, on the Lhasa River, where he is shown here multiple times stamping the Lhasa River with a chop or a stamp with the character for water on it. And so it becomes something of a poignant commentary on the relationship also between Tibet and China. And Chogyur Je, this 1994 work shows the artist himself at something of a self-portrait, but with the character, again, you start to see how language is such an important part of Chinese contemporary art. But you see here, image the character, bu, or negative, which is, I guess the English equivalent would be no. And so this negative character upon his own skin and background becomes something of a suffocating device, and I think also shows his own frustration with trying to show his work in a place like China in 1994, when most of the exhibition opportunities really existed outside of the country for these artists. And Nin Tian Miao, this was a work that she created for the International Women's Convention in 1995. She staged it at one of the important women's art exhibitions. And you'll see her use of thread or thread winding, which has been sustained throughout these years, and she continues to work with that idea of thread winding that she relates to her childhood experiences of helping her mother thread wind. And they're all little balls with threads, and she creates them from installations and more recently from paintings. This is a work by Yin Shuzhen called Ruined City, and I think it offers a really incisive commentary on what was going on in Beijing at this time when many of the hutongs and architectural heritage was being destroyed. And here she collected roof tiles and furniture and other kind of fragments from around her home. She and her husband Song Dong live in a traditional hutong, and they saw the destruction of many of the buildings around them and really wanted to talk about a kind of preservation of them in some way. And of course, all the while artists were working in Beijing and places like Shanghai, they also worked in Guangzhou. And this is a work by Lin Yilin, who staged this performance where he walls are very important to his work. They've become a metaphor for greater issues within Chinese society. And here he staged a performance across a very busy street where he moved this wall a few bricks at a time across the street, forcing the pedestrians and traffic to go around his wall. And it's considered a pretty interesting commentary on what was going on at this time in Guangzhou. There were very few places for these artists to show their work. And so especially for this Lin Yilin and the group of artists known as the Big Tail Elephant Group, they started to stage works in the public sphere, like on roads, as you see here, or other places like in bars or abandoned factory warehouses. And in 2000, I think it's often considered something of a watershed moment for a number of reasons. There was, of course, the 2000 Shanghai Biennale, which was the first occasion where a large-scale international exhibition was truly international in the sense of inviting artists from all over the world and inviting international curators such as Hu Hanru to be part of the consortium of selecting artists. And the Shanghai Biennale was important also for the satellite exhibitions that happened around that show. And one of the most important exhibitions was one that featured a lot of graphic abject art. And I think Feng Feng's Shin Brace is one of the more sedate works in that kind of show. It gives you a sense of this younger group of artists who really wanted to make international headlines. Their show, you'll have to excuse this, but it was called Fuck Off. And, that gives you an indication that show title and this kind of work was created especially for the international audiences that were coming to Shanghai specifically for that show. And they did get what they wanted, which was a whole lot of reviews and articles about their work. And interestingly enough, this younger generation of artists who emerged at this time have gone on to create another sort of work, that this kind of abject work only really had a lifespan of 1 or 2 years around the year 2000. And of course, 2000 was also the time, although this exhibition was shut down, was also the time when China started to show experimental works outside of China in state-sanctioned exhibitions. So that was a big turnaround. This had not happened before. And there were shows in Germany and subsequently in France at the Pompidou Museum where a lot of these experimental artists were shown. And so it represents something of an admission on the part of the Chinese authorities also that Chinese contemporary artists perhaps did not pose as much as to the government as a threat as they might have first thought. Now, an important factor in the reception of Chinese contemporary art has also been that of the diaspora artists. I mentioned Wang Keping, who had left for Paris. Huang Yongping also settled in Paris. And of course, there are a whole community of artists who settled in places like New York and Sydney, Australia. And this, of course, is an example of Chen Zhen, who was another artist, an important artist in terms of the overseas community, who gained important international recognition, showed his works in various galleries around the world and part of biennales and museum shows. And I just wanted to also acknowledge their role in kind of representing Chinese contemporary art to an international audience. And finally, I wanted to leave you with three images of Wang Qingsong, a younger artist based in Beijing. Three photographs, in fact, where he has, in his own mind, created an image of past, present, and future day China. Here we have the past, and here he has recreated a monument, much like that you might see at Tiananmen Square, and you'll see the artist himself is figured as a wounded soldier bearing flowers for the monument. Now we have present day China, which is, of course, a move on from the clay-bound soldiers. And of course, now we have the Industrial Revolution, if you like, in China. These images are all clad in silver, and they all bear equipment and various different symbols of China's manufacturing industry. And of course, the artist here is shown as a yuppie, a middle-class Chinese person with a baseball cap and also a dog, and one needs a license for a dog, and it's become a more and more symbol of a certain middle class. And then finally, the way that the artist imagines the future is in gold, of course. And here we have many different symbols of wealth, and you can also read a number of symbols for the upcoming 2008 Olympics. And the artist here is featured in the center with what look like symbols, but they're also the lids of cooking pots. So there's also red lanterns or gourds, and all of these are symbols of good fortune. So that brings me to the conclusion of my introduction to Chinese contemporary art. Thank you very much. I'll just shut this down for you. Okay.
So now I'd like to introduce Yuan Lei. Yuan Lei was born in 1965 and graduated from the printmaking department at Zhenjiang Academy of Fine Arts in 1991. He lived between Hong Kong and Beijing from 1997 to 2000. He currently lives and works in Beijing. Since 2000, he has primarily worked as a painter, but he is also known for his videos and his installations. He is also well known for a particular prank, which was done in 1997 with Hung Hao, and he and Hung Hao created fake invitations to Documenta and sent them to Chinese artists who were unaware that they were not receiving real invitations, but were actually receiving invitations that were parts of artworks. I mentioned Ai Weiwei earlier, who is a very well-known conceptual Chinese art, and he wrote the following in a review of Yuan Lei's exhibition in Switzerland about 18 months ago. He said, Yuan Lei's images include a circus group preparing for exhibits, the neighbor's daughter exuding tenderness and love, the opacity portrait of art workers who draw pictures for Yan Lei, Chinese zodiac without the dragon, the prosperous meal, the street unknown to anybody, artistic works by other artists, which it's not important whether he likes or not, the badly taken photograph, what is familiar to all of us, and so on and so forth. Whatever on the world, they are for Yan Lei to be drawn, and they are on Yan Lei's drawings. Now, Yan Lei, would you like to sit there, and I can work the PowerPoint for you, since you'll be speaking in Chinese with the translation, or would you both like to come up here? Perfect. Okay, great. And I'll work the PowerPoint for you.
I
do a lot of artwork, so I produce a lot of artwork. I hope I can produce one each day in my life.
就是我感觉绘画是一个有很复杂的背景，但是你要做出一个很简单的选择的一个工作。
I feel like artwork, like a painting, is very it's very complicated, but to me, I feel like I have to do a very simple choice.
关于绘画，我基本上现在目前做了三个系列的作品。
I did three series painting work in my life.
一个是 climbing space.
One is climbing space.
还有一个是 superlights.
One is superlights.
还有一个是 color wheel.
Yes, color wheel.
对，我现在已经做正在做的或者已经做完的是这三个系列的作品。
I'm still doing. I'm almost, you know, and almost finished. That's just like three series work like this.
10 years ago，我跟洪浩，我们两个人合作了一个作品，就是在我发的那个假的 documentary 的邀请信。
10 years ago, I did a performing art like with Hong Hao, it's my friend. Sending the fake letter, like a documentary invitation to the whole the artists in China.
十年以后，就是今年，我被邀请参加了这个 documentary.
10 years after today, I was invited for documentary.
我觉得这是做艺术家虚荣心和孤独感的一种，一个代表了这两样东西的一个高度。
I feel like these two things, you know, stand for like the being an artist, kind of, you know, being lonely and want to be successful, you know, this.
虚荣心.
It's kind of being artist. Every old artist want to be successful, but.
所以我现在正在做的一个作品叫 Landing.
What I'm doing now, the artwork called Landing.
就是刚刚，博物馆的人给我看了一些，就是我的作品的一些影像，他们选择出来的一些影像，让我面对这些影像来做一些解释。
I just showed the my friends from the museum about some images I want to do. They want me to do some explanation.
我想这些作品只是代表了我做艺术态度的一些片段。说一下什么？再说一遍。就是我做艺术的工作态度的一些片段。
I feel like this what I'm doing the artwork. This is my attitude.
现在看到的这个图像是我去年开始想到的一些 一个想法，就是我用一种我自己的一个工作平台，一个工作系统，然后做一个选择，因为我的作画系统是有一些每我做了上几百个颜色，几百个不同的颜色。
You know, this image is from last year. You know, the image I wanted to do, I did like 100 colors.
不，几百个，不是一百。
Several hundred colors.
对，就是说，我现在怎么想把这些把怎么如何把这个颜色放到画布上，是怎么选择这些颜色，是我面临的一个问题。
I think the problem I face to now is how to put on the 100 colors into this canvas.
这些作品表面上看起来是一个简单的一些那个就是一些彩条。
It seems very simple, like very simple. You know, you can see from that.
但是我是从哪儿开始？我是用打台球的那个方式决定选择一些号，那些号是跟颜色对在一起的，决定了它的决定这些颜色的次序。
But the way I want to choose like how to use the color is I'm playing the pool, you know, the color, the numbers on the pool, the ball. So each ball on the pool table has different colors, different numbers too. So whenever I choose, so I use what colors on.
这就是我刚刚说的那个 Super Light 那个系列。
This is what I just said. It's a Super Light, the series.
这个系列就是我完全是拷贝其他艺术家的作品。
This series just copied the artwork from other artists.
他们，我觉得原作被拷贝以后，我觉得就是说，为什么叫 Super Light？ 它稀释了以前作品里的那个能量，稀释了，就淡化了。
The reason I called it like Super Light is because minor the energy of the original artwork.
这个是一个这个作品，还有这个作品，还有这个不是。OK， 那个还有一个朝鲜的，OK， 这两个作品是我在瑞士做的一个个展里面的作品。
These are the work is from the exhibition from the Switzerland.
原作是来自 Uli Sig 收藏。
The original work is from Uli's collection. Yes.
这是一个中国，这两个都是中国艺术家的作品。
These are the two artwork from Chinese artists.
这是刚刚说到的 Climbing Space 的系列。
These are the series called Climbing Series.
这些影像基本上都是我在去国外参加展览的时候，在机场或者是在博物馆里面，我自己。亲身到的一些场地拍的一些照图片。
These images are from the trip that I went to exhibition from overseas, like from the airport or the museum.
这是我比较早的作品，大概是1999年的作品。我这些是我在尝试一种新的，我现在用的这个绘画。技术的一个那个阶段的一个作品。
These are work from 1990s. Those work I just did the you know like new things like experimental things.
他的经验来自一些城市生活。
Those are from the city life.
这是香港的一些城市的。
From Hong Kong.
这些都是差不多了。现在有的这些图像就只有这么多。我还有一个系列叫彩轮。
What I showed you now is here, but I still have another series called a color wheel. 就是管义的那个那个。It's Guan Yi's collections, just showed from the premiere presentation. Thank you.
What Yan Lei was saying there at the end is that his third series is the Color Wheel series, and when Melissa showed one of her first slides of the warehouse right outside of Beijing, on the left-hand side of the image in the back, there were four works on the top and four on the bottom that were very brightly colored, and they were these concentric circles. And so those are his color wheel works. The third series of paintings that he's done over and over again. So I'd like to start off with a couple of questions, and there are a couple of things that I think are important that we haven't touched on yet. Melissa, I'll ask the first question of you, if that's all right. In addition to the artist working in experimental media, and by that, of course, we mean video, installation, etc., there is an entirely other faction or parallel world that exists of artists working in traditional forms such as calligraphy. And is there any interaction or cross-pollination between these two worlds? Why or why not?
Yeah, I think that's a great question, and it's often why when I talk about Chinese contemporary art, I always preface it by saying it's experimental practices, because there is indeed a parallel world that exists in parallel, and there are certain artists who do cross over. I think one can see crossover between these two worlds most at art schools, and especially in Hangzhou at the National Art Academy. The calligraphy department, often artists who work in other media are able to experiment also in the calligraphy department. And one of the artists who I showed, Chou Zhijie, is an artist who is considered well-versed in traditional practices, although he chooses now to experiment in different ways with different media. I think it's important, and in fact, when we talk about all of Asian contemporary art, to remember that there are these parallel worlds. In fact, there are very successful artists who, in their home countries, are well-recognized, often as national treasures, and they create works in a whole series of different media, most often recognized in ink, which is considered one of the most elevated forms of art as we know it in East Asian cultures. And so I think it's just a very important thing to remember that what we see in contemporary art circuits is just one part of what actually goes on in places like China. Great. Perhaps Yan Lei could also offer. I mean, I think a good entry point would be perhaps to hear from Yan Lei about his own education at art school, whether it in fact did involve calligraphy or ink painting, or whether it was primarily an oil painting.
他说你做的这些那个，东西得有一些，有一些手做的这些啊装置啊，还有一些这个，绘画呀。这些东西是不是都已经都是一直在做？
都是我做的。
对。
我在九七年以前，我也就是一直是一种对艺术的一种叛逆的态度，做了很多，就是反对现实存在的一种艺术的一些东西。
Before 1997, I did a lot of artwork. That's against being artist, the fact of being artist. Yes.
九七年以后，我开始建立了我的工作室，来开始制作一些就是平面的或者绘画的东西。那么我觉得这在绘画是一个很简单的身，一个很复杂的身份。
After 1997, I built up my own studio. I feel like being an artist and is doing the painting is very complicated identification.
我后来我的兴趣就是开始把就是放在制作上。我发现了他的选择这样一种方式是有带有对艺术家的这种人格 还有对历史、对当代艺术的态度，全部可以放进这个里面，然后把它，它有的有时候可以掩盖一种，一种故事，把这故事变成一个潜在的一个东西。
And then I develop my work like this, like everybody's seeing, because I want to show that this is the way I can. It's kind of story, a lot of story behind my painting. You can hide the personality and some history reason, history story. And the attitude to the contemporary art.
So one of the single greatest influences that's often cited on the development of Chinese avant-garde art has been the return of individual artists who were studying abroad. And in fact, Yan Lei lived in Hong Kong as well. Can you share with us some of your experiences of works that you saw or artists that you interacted with that have had an influence on your own development?
你能不能给大家分享一下，就是说你是怎么，就是你自己那个进步的这种经验，就是说对当代的这种你的这种，你的这种就绘画的就进步往前进步的这种经验。
因为我觉得绘画可以让我更简单直接了，你就是说你可以有针对性的，很简单做艺术，有些时候是你要明确是给什么人去做。
I think the way I'm doing art is I know what I'm doing, and I feel like you have to, being artist, you have to know what kind of people, who I'm going to do for my art.
因为我觉得这样理解会让就是你的工作更直接。
I feel like this is the way I can make my work really work.
Is by being aware of the audience.
Yes.
Okay. Melissa, I'm going to ask you one more question and then we'll open it up to our audience, being aware of our audience. The current Biennale phenomenon is, of course, not limited to Asia. And yet the influence of these international exhibitions on artists working in Asia appears to be the most profound. Can you explain some of the reasons for this immense effect?
The effect of
these international biennales
on Asian.
Yes.
Well, it's a great question because I think that the biennale phenomenon is often castigated in the contemporary art world, especially here in the US. However, for a lot of artists who work outside of the centers, such as New York and London, I think it has been an immensely important thing for them because they have had access both to seeing international art.In their home cities. They have also been included in biennales. And what we have found is since the late 1990s, there have been a number of artists who work outside of the usual centres who have been incorporated into the kind of biennale circuit and have been able to build up such an international reputation that has seen the biennales essentially be able to launch whole careers for people. And so I think the biennales, although... They have something of a history now that I think a lot of people have grown tired of. They do have an importance. If you live outside of New York and you don't get to see certain exhibitions, they give you access to seeing shows, to seeing artists' work that you would not ordinarily have. And so I think that it's that twofold argument that...It's enabled artists to see, but it's also enabled artists to be included in an art scene, and it has had it has presented enormous opportunities for them. And just in Asia alone, I think that I have almost lost count of how many biennales there are, but alone in China, alongside the development of the art fairs, we also have periodical shows in Guangzhou, Shanghai, Beijing,Chengdu, Nanjing, all lots and lots. I mean, that's just within China. We have a couple in Japan, a couple in three in Korea, one in Hong Kong, one in India, one in Singapore. They have also become
important city events. So cities have got behind them because they have recognized the benefits of cultural tourism. So I think that we have not seen the end of biennales in places like Asia.
I think it's an important point to make because I think largely due to the strong presence of Chinese contemporary art in the market, there's been a great sort of effort in the last few years to really understand where Chinese art is coming from. And one of the sort of keys or a way of kind of getting some insight is to look at the artists who have gone abroad and come back to China and the direct lines of influence and effect that those artists and those abroad expatriate experiences have had.
Yes. I would also add that figures, Yanlei mentioned Ai Weiwei, and I would say that he has had a very important role within Beijing because when he went to New York to study, and when he returned, he brought with him all sorts of ideas. And one of the great ideas that many artists have cited was the foundation of the East Village, that Ai Weiwei talked about this East Village in New York in the 80s and how wonderful it was. And the Beijing artists, when they started to find themselves coming together to show their work and do performances in their studios, and it started to kind of congeal as a community, they thought, okay, let's call ourselves Beijing's East Village. So although there is obviously an homage, it was also born from circumstances that were peculiar to the Chinese situation.
Do you want to say anything about that? Yeah, it's true.
Yeah.
Okay, so I'd like to open it up to the audience for any questions that there are. Yes.
I
don't think there is any censorship.
798每天有几十个展览。
But there are a huge amount of exhibition in the art district called 798.
我看过一个展览。那个就是画的坦克在天安门上，就是很那个的一样在展。
I saw artwork like something like show the 1989 the Tiananmen Square something like a tank in the you know it's very very controversial artwork there, but nobody really bothered there.
Yes.
Sorry.艺术家之间的这种支持的这种帮忙的这种关系是怎么样的？
我是很少就是参与这个艺术圈里面的事情，但是我看，因为现在的艺术市场呢很活跃，制造了一些这种很大的这种很有名的这种画家出来，这个东西肯定是有好处的，对所有艺术家都是有好处的。
那你觉得艺术家之间的有一些什么支持吗？可以来往？
是可以，他不是那个来往，你就说我说的就行。
I barely to join the any the party or with other artists in Beijing, but you know, in China, the art market now is very hot, so it really creates a lot of famous big huge artists now.
这个东西对艺术家之间互相的影响都是，我觉得是有好的影响。
But this is really good influence between artists and artists, support, encouraging.、Yeah.
Just to add, there is no equivalent of NEA or NEH as it stands in China. And Yanlei's comment about the market, right now the market is the primary form of support for artists. And so...you'll see that some artists, there's something of an uneven development, some artists are doing extremely well, and then there are others for whom the market has not had an impact upon at all. So, you know, and that's because there is no other form of support for them. So.
Yes.
There are actually two points.
好的，好的。
第一个呢，你用的那个淡式，就是把它淡化。
哦哦，稀释，稀释，对对对。
稀释，
对。
你再讲一遍，你刚刚说你的那个把其他人的隶属啊，
对，
作为你的这个作品，但是你用了一个稀释的方法，这个方法是什么？再说一下。
因为我比那个原先的那个影像质量要那个虚了。不是，这是一个技术问题。有过，有，书法、国画、水墨画的这种教育，
是。
我现在没有单位，我职业，对，我上过在河北工艺美校，我生在河北，然后又上的浙江美术学院大学。这个 Superlight 我也做那个就是传统艺术的东西也有，这个系列我这个系列里面，
说一下怎么样
是，就是 copy 这个老的作品，我以前临摹过的作品。因为这个技术它带来的一种质感，一种质量，我的作画系统的这种技术，它正好吻合了我对艺术的一个态度。
I think the term of dilution is very important because it comes out of the idea of appropriation. And then it's a new way of kind of combining the idea of appropriation with other techniques, for example, using the computer and reducing the scale of color and whatnot.
It's also part of traditional Chinese art, like sort of copying another artist's behavior, becoming famous for using that artist's.
Yes. Yes, over here.
Translating, maybe I will just add a couple of comments. It's on now. While Dun Dun is translating, perhaps I will add a few words, which is one of the most famous of those sites now being used by Chinese contemporary artists is the Saatchi website. Some of you might have logged on to that, but.It's become an extraordinary forum for artists to post their works in the hopes of, I guess, getting exhibitions and selling their works and things like that. And I think it's a forum that
will not only become important for Chinese artists, but also internationally. I think websites allow people to see works, of course, when they're not based in that location. And but also, the internet has played a role historically within China, especially when there were occasions when it was difficult to stage exhibitions. There were a number of websites run by even people like Li Shenting, who is considered the grandfather of Chinese contemporary art, where he had a website and posted exhibitions on the internet in lieu of a physical exhibition. So the internet has been used historically within China already in that role.
So I'll just say we started late. This is one of the newer kind of panels at the Ideas Fest to have an art and culture, and I think we're the first to give a visual presentation, so we apologize for the delay, but I'd like to keep you on schedule. So thank you so much, Melissa and Yonlei, for being here today.